open line number. We still want your highlights, your lowlights, and your memorable moments of 2018. Now, time for the news on the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend. After that, our legends of the game, Wally Lewis, Shane Gould, and Andrew Simons.
I'm Sarah Womby. Police say the community should remain vigilant after an alleged predator charged with touching two children in the surf at a Sydney beach was arrested, then bailed. New South Wales police say the 60-year-old man was seen approaching and touching two children in the surf by a member of the public at North Cronulla Beach on Friday. The member of the public alerted lifeguards, who detained the man until police arrived to arrest him. The two girls, aged 8 and 10, are with their family. The man was charged, then released by police ahead of a court hearing at Sutherland Local Court on February 7. Victoria's Emergency Management Commissioner has urged people to remain vigilant around water following the state's fifth drowning in less than a week. Yesterday, a woman drowned at Lake Victoria near Bairnsdale. She was pulled from the water by family and friends but couldn't be revived. Emergency Management Commissioner Andrew Crisp has told the ABC people need to take care around the water.
If we're going to take anything away from these deaths, and we should take something away from them, it's just have them in the back of your mind. Just think about whether you're going to be going to the beach, you're going to inland waterways. Just think about the people that have died. Hopefully it might help you make a good decision.
Cyber security experts have warned that the number of scams usually increase over the festive period. Andrew Collins reports.
Reported cyber scams have risen nearly 50% over the past month.
When you receive an unsolicited contact, simply delete it.
That's cyber security expert Brian Hay.
If it's feeding, someone will call you back or reach out to you again.
He says it's best to ignore and delete any unsolicited calls.
And get on with your life.
Experts say the number of scams usually increase over the December-January period. Andrew Collins, Air News.
Also in news, police are investigating the murder of a 30-year-old woman in her Perth home, and a 31-year-old Adelaide man has been charged after he allegedly drove around in a stolen car threatening other motorists with a gun. Overseas, US President Donald Trump claims big progress is being made with China on trade. The American president tweeted out that he'd had a good call with President Xi Jinping of China. Our US correspondent Priscilla Huff reports.
A trade deal with China is moving along very well, claimed U.S. President Donald Trump in a tweet, adding, if made, it will be a very comprehensive, covering all subjects, areas, and points of dispute. In contrast, the Chinese statement emphasized consensus and the two countries meeting halfway. No details were offered by either side. Trade experts note that the continuing dispute is harming American farmers as China looks to other nations to fill its insatiable need for soybeans and other products. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
And the two-year-old son of a Yemeni woman who sued the Trump administration to let her into the United States to be with her ailing boy has died. The Council on American Islamic Relations announced that Abdullah Hassan had died at a children's hospital in Oakland, California, where his father had taken him for treatment for a genetic brain disorder. The boy and his father are American citizens, but his mother isn't, so she remained at their home in Egypt while fighting for a visa. She applied for a waiver in 2017, but US officials granted it only in December after the council sued. This is Air News. Australia faces defeat to India in the Melbourne Test, which would see it go 2-1 down in the series with one test to play, as Air Sports Graham Davis reports.
Cummins was unbeaten on 61 to ensure the test went into the final day, with Australia 8 for 258, having been set 399 runs to win. It is his highest test score, and earlier he had finished with 6 for 27, his best test figures, when India had declared at 8 for 106, with Agarwal scoring 42. Australia lost wickets steadily, with Jadeja taking 3, including Payne, for 26. Shaun Marsh fell LBW to Bumrah for 44, and Head was bowled for 34 off an inside edge by Ishant. But just as in the first innings, no one could go on to make a big score. Graham Davis in Melbourne for Air Sports.
The Sydney Sixers have defeated the Melbourne Renegades by 33 runs in their 2020 clash. In the women's BBL, there were wins for the Perth Scorchers and Melbourne Renegades. Sydney FC have defeated Brisbane Roar 2-1 in the A-League. In the NBL, the Sydney Kings beat the Brisbane Bullets 75-68. In the women's match, Melbourne celebrated a 75-68 win over Bendigo. And Wild Oats 11 has retained its Sydney to Hobart line honours standing after a post-race protest against it was deemed invalid. Australian Independent Radio News.
Don't whinge and whine about the traffic. Think of the wine you'll have at home. A glass of Windy Peak Cabernet Sauvignon. By De Bortoli, of course. Here's the traffic.
Heading out today, Uber makes it easy to get there on time without getting hot and sweaty. With average pickups in Sydney of just 3 minutes and 37 seconds with Uber, you can say, see you soon. Minor delays to the airport at the moment. It's busy on Marsh Street approaching the International Terminal. We're expecting heavy holiday traffic on roads in and approaching the Royal National Park today. All okay for now. And if you're off to the beach, Manly and Cronulla are the busiest and the Esplanade in Balmoral is slow going. Get caught speeding this holiday period and you'll face double the points. With double demerits in force until midnight Tuesday, January 1, you can stop it or cop it. I'm Solomon Gates, number one in racing on Sky Sports Radio.
Sky Sports Radio and Tabcorp are proud supporters of Queensland's Magic Millions. The Queensland Carnival has produced some outstanding summer winners.
Girls are ready though, pulling away the last 50 metres.
Who will emulate the Magic Millions feats of Sunlight and Pirata?
And Unite and Conquer goes on to conquer the way on Magic Millions.
The Big Sports Breakfast and Racing HQ will be live from the Gold Coast ahead of a massive race day on Saturday, January 12th. Stay with Sky Sports Radio.
The catalogue for a bigger, better Inglis Classic yearling sale is out now. Extended to more than 1,000 horses with 5 days of selling at Riverside Stables, February 9, 10, 11, 12 and 14, 2019. Catalogue available at inglis.com.au.
Sky Sports Radio, Sydney weather.
Morning haze in the west, hot and mostly sunny. Winds west to northwesterly, 15 to 25 kilometres an hour. Air quality might be down a little today, so be careful if you're an asthma sufferer. Maximum of 32 degrees, a 10% chance of rain. Let's hope that doesn't happen quite obviously, Roman, unless you're worried about your lawns and you need a bit of drop of rain. Now, thank you very much to all the listeners who sent us in the suburbs, starting with O. We did need some help.
We definitely did.
But on the back of Jared from Oatlands saying, I love my sport and your program on Sunday is the icing on the cake. Thank you for this year. Happy New Year and keep up the great work. So, Jared, on the back of that, Ray, what is the temperature right now at Oatlands and for today at Orange?
Yep, Happy New Year to you, Jared, and your family. Oatlands currently 27 degrees, James, warming up already. Out at Orange, heading for a top temperature of 32 degrees, hot and sunny at Orange.
She had some catch in, and that's exactly what happened. Usman Khawaja gets the catch. Paddy Cummins, six, if you don't mind. Career best figures for Patrick Cummins.
He finds his way to Sydney and finds his way!
The Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy Smith and Ray Thomas.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Final hour of 2018.
Countdown, James.
Yeah, the countdown is on, Roman. 9 minutes, 8 minutes past nine. Tricky things, numbers, aren't they? 1353 is the open line number. Big hour coming up. We've got our legends of the game, Wally Lewis, Shane Gould and Andrew Simons. A sports update with Tanya. Phil Moss will give us his thoughts on
Liverpool.
The A-League. No doubt we'll have to sit through boring acknowledgement of the performance of Liverpool overnight. And Trent Lanscale, our Victorian listener, will have a chat to him, as well as Scotty Foster, our man Scotty Foster, selling cars left, right and centre in 2018. We are, though, looking for our highlights, lowlights and memorable moments of 2018.
You got one there from Manly Manel.
It's not a bad one. Morning, boys. My early morning walk in Penrith was down to the bathroom, then to the fridge for a beer, then out to the shed to tune into the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend. It's a hard life out west. Highlights, definitely Mundine's knockout. Lowlight, Todd Carney, not given a return to the NRL, yet certain individuals with criminal convictions get a go. Go figure. Manly Man now.
Yeah,
interesting
one,
take on it.
It is, yeah. Our good friend Don from Carlton's just chimed in.
Hang on. Let's say Don from Carlton's just chimed in.
Lovely man, Don. I told you on the plane that time, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, lovely man. Yes, Jimmy, you need to take more notice of Ray's warnings. My lawyers are poring over the transcripts of today's show as we speak. Don from Carlton, there you go.
Don, just remember, the truth is a defence. 1353 53, the open line number. We've got this on the back of Wayne's call. Now, Wayne mentioned that Auntie Mary won the mayor's race up there, where three of them were in foal, so to speak. No name on this one. It says Carton of Wingman for Wayne. And then we get this from John from Moorbank. Jimmy and Ray, my highlight of the year was Wayne's call. Nearly ran off Canterbury Road. Happy New Year. Same to you, John from Moorbank.
Same to you, John.
Been a great supporter of the program over a long period of time. Yes, Wayne. Very, very interesting. I just hope Auntie Mary wasn't listening to the call. What we were listening to throughout 2018 was our Legends of the Game. They were outstanding. Here's a compilation of three of the best, Wally Lewis, Shane Gould and Andrew Simons. And let's start with how Wally Lewis nearly made his way to the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles back in the 1980s. Speaking of Gene Miles, how close did you come to signing with Manly, the two of you, back in, I think it was 1986?
Oh, we signed. We were signed, sealed, unfortunately not delivered. we went through a bit of a process where, in those days, to even negotiate with a player, if you want to play State of Origin football, you have to sign saying that you promise to stay in Queensland for the next 2 years.
Right.
Those agreements were basically illegal. Ron McAuliffe admitted he thought that they were illegal. He said, but son, he said it's going to take a long time for this to get into court to start fighting this out, probably 2 or 3 years, of which you won't be able to play. So the guys used to sign, and you know, they'd all head off to Sydney clubs, unfortunately, but that was the case of us doing it. With the Manly one, though, we hadn't been paid by a club here in Brisbane, Winner Manly, who Gene Miles, myself, Greg Dowling, Colin Scott were playing for. They'd gone broke, and we hadn't been paid for about 3 years.
Wow.
And in those days, I think we were paying about 18.9% bank interest minimum. So it was very disappointing. You know, we felt that, you know, a lot of guys, the marriages were breaking up because of the wives were sort of saying, you've got to get out. We couldn't leave the clubs. Cut a long story short, we had to get an offer from Sydney. We were told that there was a Sydney club, and the clubs had to apply for permission to negotiate with the clubs to get that in motion. If they were granted that sort of opportunity, then the communication could start. We weren't told who the club was. We just got told to be at a certain place, which was the old Brisbane Airport. We thought, strange place to do the negotiations here. A bloke came up and said, I'm a pilot. I've got to fly you to Sydney. It's a private jet. Who's flying us down? Don't know. Just been hired to do it. Flew us to Sydney. Gino and I, when we were flying down, had sort of discussed how much we were talking about getting. We thought, well, you know, we've got to ask about about 70 grand, 80 grand. The top players in Sydney are on about 90. And to cut a long story short, when we were down there, on the way, we worked out what we were going to ask for. We got picked up and delivered to Kerry Packer's office. And we just went absolutely cold. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what to do. The plans that we had in place, we were probably doubting them a bit. and then we walked into Packer's office and he looked at us and he said, so you're the blokes causing us all the trouble. Threw a contract in front of both of us and said, hurry up and sign those. We said, well, we can't, Mr. Packer. You've got to make us an offer. He said, son, let's get one thing straight. You're in my office. You'll do business my way. I don't gotta do anything. And we were swallowing a little bit hard. And he said, well, Mr. Packer, and he said, and then Doug Daly was the Manly secretary. He was there as well.
Yeah.
He said, Mr. Packer, we can't have these players talking about how much each other's going to be on. It's not fair. And Gene and I had both talked. We said, you know, we're going to both ask for 75 grand. You and me, we're best friends. 75 grand. We can't do it. 75,000. We've got to stick to it. Yep, best mates. You aren't getting more than me. No. Same. Yep. That's the way to do it. And Doug Daly said, yeah, got to be one at a time. So Gino virtually tore a hamstring getting out the door, leaving me in there. And Packer said, son, I've got a few things on today. Okay, so if you don't mind, let's get this over and done with. How much can I ask for? And I said, well, Mr. Packer, you got it. And he said, oh, I know, you don't got to do anything. Well, what about those, you know, sort of, if I say 75, you're going to chop me down, 75, chop me down. I thought, oh, I'll ask, well, double that, that'll get things moving. He said, well, let's get it underway. how much can I ask for? I said, well, okay, well, if you want me to be there, you're going to have to give me $150,000, Mr. Packer. And he started giggling, and that turned into a vicious roar. Laugh you. He said, you're a Queenslander. You reckon you can get that sort of money here in Sydney? You're a Queenslander. And he just kept laughing, and I felt the embarrassment, ridiculous, about doubling the money. I thought, oh, this is stupid. You know, oh, no. And I've also double-crossed my best friend, who I promised we're only going to ask for 75, my best mate. Oh, no. And he said, and that's what you're asking. And I said, well, if you want me here at Manly, that's how much you're going to give me. And by the way, it's a 3-year deal, not a 2. And he stopped laughing. He said, you're an arrogant so-and-so, aren't you? And I said, yeah, I've already agreed to that. Yep. And he said, and you're greedy too. And I said, yep. But you give me the 3-year deal and you got me. And he said, done. You're easy. Get out and get the next bloke in here. And I sort of went all cold for a minute. I thought, I'm getting that money. This is ridiculous. Wow. And I thought, oh, but what about my mate? I promised him. That's how I'll whisper it to him when I go past. And Packer said, you wait here. We'll get the other bloke in here first. You're not telling him how much you're getting.
Oh, yeah.
So Gino walked in, and I was trying to raise my eyebrows to look at him when I walked out. I walked outside, and I just finished shaking hands with Bob Fulton and Doug Daly, who were there representing the club. It was probably 15 seconds, and I was feeling super guilty about the double-crossing Gene. And then I heard the buzzer on the secretary's desk. You can come back in there. And I thought, I've given Gino, poor old Gino, what, 10, 15 seconds. I couldn't look at him when I got in there, and Packer said, oh, well, Bob, you got yourself an easy deal here. He said, we've got these blokes in. He said, they both agreed to terms. And I said, oh, no. And he said, Lewis, he's already announced his and signed, and he's on 150. I said, oh, no, my best friend. I'm not going to look at him and see what he's going to say here. And he said, and Miles, he's on $135,000. Oh, my best friend. I was worried about double crossing. I looked at him straight in the face, and he just had the tongue stuck out the side of the cheek. And it was one of those things that, as Packer said later, fellas, I think both of you should just realise today, you never, ever trust your mates. No such thing.
Shane, can I ask you about the Munich Olympics and, well, what became an extraordinary event in its own right for the wrong reasons, and that was the terrorism that we saw with the Israeli athletes. As an athlete in that village going through what was happening at the time, what was that like? Because I remember reading and watching the TV at the time, and there was some talk of the Olympics actually being abandoned halfway through it. Then they, after a couple of days, it continued. Can you give us a sense of what it was like as athletes in the village during that period?
Yes. Well, what happened is that there was a lot of terrorism in the 1970s. There was planes being hijacked and people being taken hostage. And so the Palestinians, the PLO, the people from the PLO, came to the men's village in Munich and took 11 Israeli athletes and officials hostage. And I think 2 were killed in the village, and then the others were taken out. My facts might not be 100%, but the others were taken out away from the village, and then the whole, most of the, all of the Israelis were killed, and in the helicopter they were in blew up, and so there was this act of terrorism in the Olympic Village. Now, it occurred the night after the swimming finished. In the Olympics, because swimming and athletics are the two big popular sports, they put the swimming on in the first week and then the athletics on the second week. So the swimming had finished on the Sunday night, and it was the Monday morning when that terrorism attack occurred, and then it played out all during that Monday, and the mood in the village, of course, when I went to get breakfast, it was just dead, there was just no one around, there was no one walking around, there were guys with machine guns, German soldiers with machine guns, and of course we were, told what happened, and then the Australian team went out of the village for the day to do a swimming game. demonstration and a bit of some diplomacy in a town away from Munich. So the whole thing was played out. Anyhow, when we got back, and then we were standing around a black and white television, and it was all being described in German, so most of us couldn't understand what was going on. And I think even the media didn't know what was going on. They didn't have a perspective. And they were uncertain about whether more attack was going to happen. And so I was taken out of the village because they didn't know if successful people like myself and Mark Spitz. Mark Spitz happened to be of Jewish origin. He won 7 gold medals for America in the pool. And, well, 4¾. He won 4 individual and 3 relays. I love statistics, yeah. So there was tension there, and the International Olympic Committee just didn't know what to do. But Avery Brundage, the president of the Olympic Committee, and the committee decided, along with talking with international diplomats and presidents and armies, and they decided the Olympic movement had to override that terrorism attack and continue on. So we didn't know a lot about what was going on, but I didn't get to celebrate, you know, in the village and watch other events. And I really didn't know the overview of what had happened until I read Time magazine on the way home a week later.
Yeah, right.
Wow.
But, of course, two movies, a documentary and a movie has been made of it, and we understand, you know, even more about what happened. But it was a terrible time, you know, terrorism is still around, but, you know, but it was very, very raw. And, you know, we had to be frisked at airports. You know, they didn't have electronic, you know, things they do now. And, so it was very much in your face. And, but my swimming had finished, but the athletes had to pick themselves up and re-motivate. To do their running and track things.
Andrew, looking back on your career now, and as we've touched on some of the highlights, do you look back on a career fulfilled, or were there things that you still wish you could have achieved with the baggy green?
Yeah, look, I would like to have been a better player. I reckon I should have averaged probably 5 or 8 more in Test cricket. I probably should have averaged 5 more in one day cricket. And my bowling, like I was never a very good bowler, but I did work on my bowling hard for that very reason. I should have been a bit better with the ball as well. But in the end, I suppose the politics, you know, and I did some silly things too, don't get me wrong, with the politics, and I just felt let down when we went through the Harbijan thing, and that weighed very heavily on me.
Yes.
I felt responsible for, you know, dragging my mates into a situation which was not their fault and was just handled poorly, and, you know, we didn't get the support we needed. And then I started to get on the grog, and, you know, it was a sort of beginning of the end for me there. And then, so I suppose I left the game. I had enough, but probably had enough for the wrong reasons, because I probably would have liked to have, should have played for another couple of years, but my headspace was all wrong, you know, and that was a shame. You know, I'd like to have gone out, I suppose, a bit more on the terms that I would have liked, I suppose, and sort of left my teammates sort of saying, mate, you know, that was really good having you around and enjoyed playing with you. And sort of in the end, it wasn't that, I suppose. It was sort of like didn't want the limelight and the attention, and I just had enough of the politics and the I suppose all that sort of thing. So I was out. And when I actually came back into the side after I'd been suspended, and the feeling that I had for being in that situation had changed, and that's when I sort of knew. Tim Nielsen was a coach, and he said, how are you going with it? And I said, well, I won't actually know until I get out in the middle and have a game and see what I'm feeling in the actual competitive situation. And when I found that was in the UAE, I sort of went out there to bat, and we were playing Pakistan. It was a tight game. And, yeah, my passion for the battle had changed a bit. It wasn't that I didn't want to be in the battle, but it was just I just didn't want to be in that environment, I think it was. Mm. And so that was a sign for me. And, I sort of, not long after that, I was finished.
There he goes. Mm. Very thoughtful, Andrew Simons. Incredible insight from Shane Gould about Munich in 1972 and Wally Lewis, who might have told that story once or twice before, recounting how he very closely came to signing with the Manly Ringers. Well, did sign with the Manly Ringers Eagles, how close he came to playing with them. Mm.
I tell you what, Jimmy, that Legends segment is my favourite part of the show, and we've got to actually thank all those people who have agreed to come on as Legends.
Yes.
Because one, not only are they very open and honest, it's remarkable. They just laid bare things that I haven't heard before, particularly with Shane Gould. I never realised that both Shane Gould and Mark Spitz, amongst other the, quote, successful athletes,
yes,
were ushered out in secret out of the Olympic Village. Little things like that, extraordinary insights into their lives and their successes, and indeed some of the tragedies that they've had to experience in their lives as well.
Incredible that the IOC was able to rank some lives higher than others based on performance at a Games. 13:53:53, the open line number. We'll take a break after the break. Sports update with Tanya. A-League and EPL update with Phil Moss. Cricket update with Stewie Clark. And, of course, we'll take your calls.
Sky Sports Radio covers all the major greyhound racing around New South Wales and Australia.
Good morning, everyone. Plenty of feature racing coming up.
Going Greyhounds with host John Bunny Brash brings you all the latest news, interviews and tips galore. Catch it every Monday morning from 10:30 here on Sky Sports Radio.
Summer is a great time to play catch-up, whether it's with the cricket, tennis, or on those projects around the house. Get inspired for your home reno with Wideline Windows and Doors. Whether it's awnings at Avalon, sliding windows at Seven Hills, or bifolds at Broadmeadow, all backed by a 7-year guarantee. Take a closer look at the stylish range of Wideline Windows and Doors. Get started today by visiting wideline.com.au.
Is it carried? He's claimed it, Pennant, and Payne goes, and it's that man, Boomer, again.
On Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
Yeah, welcome back to the program. Just before we talk cricket, we had an earlier caller, Phil, who was talking about Channel 7, moving it over to the other station, and this comes in from our great mate, Greg from Yagoona. Mm-hmm. He said, Jimmy, tell Phil that Channel 7 showed the extra half hour of cricket on 7, mate. Yeah, and that if he wants to watch the Big Bash, stop being a tight ass and get Fox. Thank you. Getting straight to the point there. Let's get straight to the point with Stewie Clark, the former Australian fast bowler, and what he's been seeing down at Melbourne over the last couple of days. Hello, Stewie.
G'day, Jim. G'day, Ray. How are you?
Yeah,
happy
well. Hey, mate, what happened to the pitch after the first 2 days that we were talking about during the course of the week? It was like, oh, no one's going to get a wicket. And then Australia batted.
Yeah, well, Australia batted horribly in the first innings. I think that's probably fair to say. The wicket started to deteriorate. We were probably a bit harsh on it. But, look, it's still not a great wicket. It's lifeless. There's no real carry in it, which is sort of what you really want. I know it's deteriorated to now it's spinning and there's a bit up and down and all the rest of it, but I still don't think it's a good wicket. But as far as the cricket goes, we just didn't bat very well. And now we've got Pat Cummins and Nathan Lyon trying to save the test match.
Mm. Yeah, good morning, Stu. A lot of people now calling for changes, particularly in the top six. The problem that Jim and I were discussing earlier, Stu, there's no one really knocking the door down at Sheffield Shield level or any other level of cricket at the moment to demand or command a spot in that top six.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other thing is, why are you going to change it for one test? And then I know we played Sri Lanka, I think, a little bit later in January. But mate, the reality is Warner and Smith are going to be back in the not-too-distant future. So you're basically picking a couple of guys that are going to play for two or three tests. And to your other point, well, who are we going to pick?
Mm.
The Big Bash, and this is one of the criticisms of the Big Bash, is it's right in the middle of our test series. So you don't have anyone having any form over long version
cricket.
Yeah. I know Peter Hanscom got some runs in Big Bash cricket, but I just don't think Peter Hanscom's the answer.
Yeah.
It's a tough, you're basically just going to take a punt on someone that you think's looked okay, or you go back to someone like Joe Burns, who I don't think is playing Big Bash cricket at the moment. He's probably playing grade cricket and done okay, I suppose, at Shield cricket without being great.
Well, surely he's done better, and he's a specialist opener. Surely he's done better than Aaron Finch. And Aaron Finch, short form, no problem. Long form, statistically, he is not an opener, and yet they persist with him, Stewie.
Yeah, they did, and look, that was mentioned pre the series as well. That,
yes.
You know, statistically, he's not the best opener we have, not one of the best openers we have. He averages 18 in Australia in first-class cricket or in the last couple of years, or there was some stat running around like that. But, you know, we picked him after he's, you know, he was okay over there in the UAE and did a serviceable job.
Mm.
But the reality was, history said that, you know, when the wickets bounced a little bit and just did a little bit off the seam, he was never going to be, he doesn't have the technique that stands up to good fast bowling. I think you're also seeing a little bit, you've got to pay some credit to the Indian bowlers as well.
Yes.
They've been very good this series. They've bowled fast, they've bowled well, they've got the ball to move off the straight. And it probably goes to show that shield cricket bowling isn't that strong. I think that's the other thing we sometimes forget, that guys go back to shield cricket, and when they do get runs, they get runs against mediocre attacks sometimes. Because our three best quicks, and the reality is only three real quicks are in the Australian team.
Yep.
A lot of other guys play short version cricket in the odd game here or there, with probably the exception of Chris Tremaine. But, you know, maybe the attacks aren't they just that good in shield cricket at the moment.
Good point. Hey, Stewie, you're about to get into day five, the final day. I guess we need a miracle. We just saw some vision from Melbourne as getting ready for the day five there. Covers are on the pitch. There's some light rain falling. That might be our chance, Stu.
It is the hope. It rains for 6.5 hours straight. Look, the Indians, if they can get out there as soon as possible and make, you know, really two balls they need, two good balls. But in fairness, Pat Cummins, he put a price on his wicket.
Yes.
He played nice and straight. And it probably goes to show some of the other guys, batting's not easy, let's face it. And the guys at the top of the order was a little bit different. But Pat Cummins, you know, he put value on his wicket, played nice and straight.
Yes.
And he's 60 not out. And in fairness to Nathan Lyon, he did the same thing. You know, Mitchell Marsh, I'm not sure what he was thinking. He was obviously trying to chase down the total last night to have the day off. Because he hit a sixth over before, which was a massive six. And I think I was sitting with a few guys and said, we need to be cheering about this.
Yeah.
And he got out three balls later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, very strange. Oh, I'm a firm believer. I was talking to Ray about it too. Mitchell Stark does not put a high enough price on his wicket. He hits the ball really cleanly, and he got out last night slogging. Ed Cowan.
Yeah, he was in that boat as well. I'm not sure what Mitch was doing there. He bats well enough. He's got a test 99 and probably should have got 100.
Yeah.
You know, he bats well enough to be able to get in behind him and Bob. I'm really not sure what he tried to do yesterday.
Pat Cummins' performance in this test match has underscored why they put such an investment in him when he had those many injuries. Ed Cowan was, I heard him on ABC Radio, suggesting that he's a future captain of Australia as a former fast bowler and a former captain. Do you see that happening for Pat Cummins?
Well, it's an option, isn't it? It's certainly, there's no one else knocking down the door to be captain. Tim Payne's doing a serviceable job, but I'd like to see him get some more runs. I'm not sure what Pat's captain's credentials are like.
No.
I'm sure he could grow into it. I'm sure he's a good leader. I don't think he's got any issue about that. He leads from the front. He's sort of, you know, he's quite that inspirational character. He bowls good spells. He puts price on his wicket. What's his tactical ability like? I don't really know, to be fair. But I think, you know, there's a lot of things that I suppose go into making a good captain. Pat's got the whole leadership thing sorted. I don't think that's a question.
Right.
I don't think he's ever been tested, I suppose, as a tactical captain, but maybe that's next time he plays the odd shield game or something like that. You give him a crack at it and see how he goes. It is hard work, though. Bowling and being captain is hard because not only, he runs in all day and he bowls fast. Mm. You get tired, you start losing concentration to some extent. You're moving fielders. You've got to worry about everyone else. That's why bowlers don't generally make, the better captains, although some of them can be very tactically good. You just get physically worn down because you're in the game the whole time.
Yeah. I know from my limited experience at third and fourth grade level, Stuart, that you're never short of an over when you're captain. I know that.
Well, mate, and you get to choose when to bowl too, which is the best bit. When the tail end is ringing.
Improve the averages.
I'll take it on here. Someone else have a crack at this.
Yeah, flat road, and the openers are still going. No, I can't.
Mate, there's horrendous stories of blokes in grade cricket being first grade captain or second grade captain and flat wicket out at Howell Oval or something like that. Bowled four overs for the match.
Kept throwing the ball to somebody else.
very good. Hey, mate, enjoy your Sunday and we'll speak later.
Good on you, buddy, and you have a good... Hey, Jim, just good luck with that wake-up tomorrow morning. I hope you enjoy that.
Happy New Year, Stu.
Happy New Year, boys. Good on you.
See you. There he is, Stewie Clark, with his thoughts on the Melbourne Test match. Yes, our best hope. It's raining. Yeah. Please continue to rain down in Melbourne. 13:53:53, open line number. Time now for this. Yeah.
Sports Breakfast Weekend with a sports update. Here's Tanya Thomas.
And as just discussed, Australia's Pat Cummins denied India victory on day four of the third cricket test at the MCG. Cummins not out on 61 at stumps with Nathan Lyon on six. Got the home team to the end of the day to put Australia at 8 for 258, requiring a further 141 today. The Aussies need a miracle or a monsoon to stop India taking a 2-1 series lead into Sydney. Meantime, the Melbourne Renegades missed the opportunity to go level with Hobart on top of the BBL table after going down to the Sydney Sixers last night at Marvel Stadium. The Sixers made an insignificant 132, only to hold the Renegades to 9 for 99 and win by 33 runs. Sydney FC beat a downtrodden Brisbane 2-1 in the A-League game last night at Jubilee Oval, the Roar having to regroup after the sacking, or the resigning, I should say, of coach John Aloisi. The win was the Sky Blues' third victory in a row to put them in second place with Perth, who play the Central Coast tomorrow. Tonight, Newcastle hosts Adelaide. The Kings cemented top spot on the NBL ladder with a 75-68 win over Brisbane in last night's game in Sydney. Jerome Randle top scored with 17 for the home team. Andrew Bogut next with 14 and 12 rebounds. It'll be the first time in over a decade that they are on top of the comp heading into the new year. Australia won its opening match at the Hopman Cup Tennis last night in Perth, 2-1 over France. Ash Barty defeated Elise Cornet 7-5-6-3, and then Matt Ebden came back from a set down to beat Lucas Pouille 3-6-7-6-6-2. The French then went on to win the doubles. Also last night, Great Britain beat Greece 2-1. The Aussies next place Spain on Wednesday night. Meantime, the Brisbane International begins today at the Queensland Tennis Centre. A Roberto Firmino hat-trick was the highlight of Liverpool's 5-1 demolition of Arsenal as the Premier League leaders opened up a 9-point gap on top of the table. In other matches, Brighton 1, Everton 0, Fulham 1, Huddersfield 0, Leicester 0, Cardiff 1, Watford and Newcastle 1 all, and second place Tottenham 1, Wolverhampton 3. Tasmanian Yacht Alive has taken out overall honours in the Sydney to Hobart race. The Duncan Hines skippered 66-footer was officially declared the race's handicap winner this morning. Alive had sailed neck and neck with the all-female crewed Wild Oats 10, who finished second overall. And former England cricket captain Alastair Cook has been knighted in the Queen's New Year's Honours list for services to cricket. So arise, Sir Alastair.
Sir Alastair.
Didn't
Cook.
See David Beckham on that list.
He's still upset about that, isn't he?
No, they're upset with him by the sounds of it. Poor old Dave.
Hey, Ken, highlights, lowlights and most memorable moments for 2018.
Okay, just quickly. So my highlight for the year was the Kings signing Andrew Bogut.
Hasn't it?
The injection into that team. Bark. Now, if you look at the roster, Jerome Randle, Kevin Leash, Brad Newley, they've still got the stars from last season, but it's that injection he's a Bogut.
He was a difference again last night, wasn't he, against Brisbane?
Jerome Randle literally ran rings around a player last night.
He went back and forwards and then around. This guy was probably twice his height.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Fast.
So that was my highlight, Bogut coming to the Kings. What the heck? I mean, that came from nowhere. Mm. Parramatta, obviously, the wooden spooners. What the heck?
Sorry, yeah.
Again. And my most memorable moment was, Jimmy, you would have witnessed this. You went to the Dally M's this year, didn't you? When Roger Tuivasa-Sheck was on stage receiving his award, and those three Kiwi players did that impromptu haka.
Wow. Isaac, Jaz Tavunga, and then from the Canberra Raiders was...
Rapana. Joshua
Rapana.
Rapana.
That's a great one, Ken.
We don't have anything like that, do we? We've just got a standing O. That's about all we do.
Yeah.
But when
you saw his face, you took realised what that meant to him, because for us, the Aussies in the audience, you, Jimmy, probably didn't realise. Maybe thought it was a bit of a joke at first.
No,
you didn't. You got this emotion from the room.
Absolutely. Yeah. And
it made you watch. It was compelling.
I stood
up
after it and clapped.
Did you? Yeah.
Because, and then was lucky enough to be still out later with a number of people, including Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, who I know from his time at the Roosters, and Isaac Luke. And I said, you guys created tonight the most special moment in the history of this award.
Yes,
good
most point. Definitely.
You're a star, Ken.
That's a great award.
Can I
win
the
award?
Do I get the prize?
Yeah, absolutely.
The wing sport?
Hang on.
No, you can't do the wing sport.
Sally has the sermon that she's going to give me the wingman. So, and the other thing is, if you win the wing sports, then Ray has to read it to you at night.
There's about 10 of them at home. It's okay, I'll pass. Okay.
Are they into a second print?
They are. Not yet, but about to.
What are the chances? Yeah.
You'd be making a fortune out of this, right?
I haven't seen a cent of it yet.
We haven't booked our European vacation,
I got the call on Friday, I said, oh, that's really good, about the second print. But there was nothing about this day race coming your
way. So let me get this right. You pay full freight at Panthers, and you haven't seen a cent from the Wings book. Something doesn't seem to compute here, Roman.
I hate asking for anyway.
I hate asking. You know what? If you don't ask, you don't get.
You can be my manager, Jim.
As I say to you, the meek will not inherit the earth.
You can go into battle for me, mate.
1353-53, the open line number. Great nomination, Ten. We do appreciate that. We're going to go to a break, and then after the break, we'll go. Bloody Phil Moss coming to talk Liverpool.
Go Liverpool.
Sky Sports Radio talks harness racing all year round, starting New Year's Day. A special On the Pace will look back at 2018 and future harness racing in New South Wales. On the Pace, Tuesday morning from 10:30. Stay with Sky Sports Radio.
Mum, the deals at the Bingley Bigger Than Big Sale are unheard of.
Okay, I'm listening.
Save up to $300 on Miele dishwashers. Save up to $700 on top mount, bottom mount and French door fridges. Get a Hitachi 415-litre top-mount fridge for just $5.99. Get a Bosch 8-kilo washer for just $6.99. Or a Hire 8.5-kilo washer for just $3.99.
They're not a heard of now.
Bigger Than Big Sale on now at Bingley.
Inglis, the only auction house to sell a two-year-old Group 1 winner in Australia this year. Esther Jarb in the Golden Slipper.
Esther Jarb hanging on.
Written by in the Blue Diamond.
But it's written by for Jordan Childs. What a victory.
Seabrook in the Champagne Stakes.
And Seabrook goes on to win it.
And the Autumn Sun in the JJ Atkins.
The Autumn Sun stretches.
Where will the smart buyers be in 2019? English.com.au.
Sky Sports Radio, you're tuned to the Big Sports Breakfast Weekend with Jimmy and Ray.
One of the things that's really important in any sport is identification of talent and then recruitment of that talent. And I've got to say, if there's one thing that Sydney FC have done over the course of their history is they've been able to find players, and you've got to remember that the soccer community and playing group is bigger than anything else around the world. They get players that come and absolutely make a difference to the
make an impact.
Lafondra, again, he's now the leading goal scorer in A-League. I think that's arguably Sydney FC's greatest attribute. Phil Moss, what do you say? Good morning.
Good morning. You pretty much took the words out of my mouth, Jimmy. He's been a wonderful addition to the Sydney FC squad, and there's two things. First of all, the boots he's got to fill. Bobo, 27 goals in 27 games, point one. Point two, he's a foreigner, and foreigners generally don't settle as quickly as that into the A-League. Because you think about it, especially the ones who come from Europe, because of the pitches are much softer over there, the weather conditions.
Yes.
You know, they come over here, all of a sudden they're playing in 35, 36 degree heat.
Yeah.
And the travel. The travel in the A-League is up there, if not more, than any league you'll find in Europe. Mm. So for him, and strikers are judged with a black and white rule. You're either scoring goals or you're not.
Yeah.
And he's scoring goals, and he's an excellent acquisition. And you know what? It's not just his goals, it's his work rate. It's how much work he does in general play, how smart he is with the ball, when he releases first touch, when he holds onto the ball, gets his body in and takes the pressure off his team. And defensively, strikers aren't renowned for being big defenders.
Yeah.
His work rate without the ball when Sydney are defending is incredible.
Mm.
He's a shining example.
Oh, he's a star. Phil, going into the new year, three teams currently on top with 20 points. Melbourne Victory dropped a point. Wellington Phoenix keep rising, so to speak. They're having a terrific season. Of course, Perth Glory have a game in hand, and Sydney FC. Early predictions, those three?
Yeah, look, I think the table is taking shape pretty much to where we thought it was. A surprise packet, you would say, is Wellington.
Yeah.
No doubt
it's great,
about that.
Isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It really is. And it's quite ironic. Mark Rudin was quite an outspoken voice against Wellington when he was at Fox Sports.
Okay.
Remember there was a rant, Mark Bosnich, Mark Rudin.
Get rid of the New Zealand team.
And now there he is. And I think what's happened there is he's been sold a vision by the owners over there, and he's really bought into it. And it's funny, when you're on the outside to something compared to on the inside, you see a totally different picture. But he's really embraced that siege mentality, and he's invested it in the players. And what he's bought there is a real mental edge. And I look at someone like Andrew Durante, who's been around for years and years. He's the captain of the Phoenix. The mental edge that guy is showing this season is a shining light for the rest of the squad. And they've shown now that they can travel. They've beaten Sydney. They've drawn with Melbourne Victory. Consistency now and ensuring that they pick up points on the road consistently. And we always know that they're hard to beat at home. But they've got some wonderful players as well. That's Sarpreet Singh. He's an absolute star. Davey Williams scored a great goal on the weekend. And he's got some depth. When you got Jacob Burns on the bench, that's showing that he's building depth.
The other thing that can change your perception too is when you check your bank balance every month and you recognise where that money's coming from.
Definitely plays a part.
Absolutely. So Mark Rudin, we understand why there has been a change.
Which is why you get up so early every Sunday morning and come in.
Underpaid. I'll tell you what, the other thing too, underappreciated by my teammates, and I use that in inverted commas.
It's one team unit.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. It's called Liverpool.
And as I say every time, I wish I was on it.
Nice little segue.
Tommy Orr is back. Is he going to be enough? How much do we expect from him? And this is the annual clash too that they have on New Year's Eve, which is when I say always a big one, let's hope it's a big one for them this week.
Yeah, that's right. We talk of Central Coast Mariners against Perth at Gosford Stadium, and the Mariners have got a wonderful record. They've won 14 out of 18 against Perth in Gosford. And they haven't lost a New Year's Eve clash up there against Perth, 3 out of 3.
Wow.
The last time the Mariners lost on New Year's Eve was when Graham Arnold took over in 2010, and I was up there, and it certainly put a bit of a dampener. We kept the champagne on ice that night, unfortunately, but a great record. I think Tommy Orr's a massive in. The problem is he hasn't played for so long, so it's going to take him time to find his feet. But I still think the biggest loss for the Mariners at this point in time is Ross McCormack. And where is Ross?
Yeah.
No one knows. He's back in England, apparently. It's smokes and mirrors, really. Smoke and mirrors, because apparently he got a knock on the knee at training, went back to Aston Villa to get assessed, was supposed to be back here and getting back into the swing of things around now, Christmas, New Year, and he's still not back in Australia, and there's no news. So that's a mystery.
Absolutely. The Jets play Adelaide United as well.
Yes.
7:30 tonight.
That's right. That's a big one. That is a massive one for Newcastle. They need Roy O'Donovan to find his match fitness, and that's not easily done when you've been out for so long. Obviously, the off-season, then he missed the first 9 rounds, or 8 rounds, sorry, of the competition. But he started last week, got some good minutes under his belt. Newcastle have been creating chances every single week that Roy O'Donovan will take once he's match fit.
Yeah.
And that's the crucial part of their puzzle that's been missing.
2.25, the Jets in that game against Adelaide United. $3.05 United, $3.50 the draw. That starts 7:30 tonight.
Yeah, only 1 point between them on the table as well. Adelaide in sixth on 12 points. Newcastle on 11 in seventh. I'm going to tip Newcastle to get the result at home. Adelaide have been there or thereabouts this season so far, but they still lack that go-to number nine. Mm. And I think in Roy O'Donovan, Newcastle have got theirs back.
Fair enough. EPL, Liverpool 5-1 over Arsenal.
Jimmy, do you want to leave the studio now?
Seriously.
Seriously, Jimmy, this is big news now, because they've got nine.
It?
Well, it is. They've got 9 points clear.
Theirs to lose.
No, don't say that.
Look, I don't. You know what? I actually don't mind people saying it's ours to lose now, because really it is. I mean, Manchester City play tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Southampton visiting. Man City go to Southampton tonight. So, you know, that gap could close. But here's the big one. Here's the big rider. On Friday morning at 7 a.m. our time, Liverpool travel to Manchester City.
That's the game.
Now, that's the game. If ever there was a game that will...
That's a six-point game.
That is. Oh, that is huge. That is absolutely huge. So, look, Man City will go to Southampton and get the 3 points. I don't doubt that, although they are going there with a bit of pressure.
Mm.
And given what's happened over the Christmas period,
yes.
There are no certainties. But you look at the quality between the two squads, and Man City should be certainties going into that one. But football's a funny old game. Football's a funny old game, Jimmy. But last night, what we saw with Liverpool was phenomenal, and the manager Jurgen Klopp said he nearly cried on the sideline when Mo Salah gave the ball to Firmino to get his hat trick from the penalty spot at 3-1. That's remarkable, because someone like Mo Salah, who lives and dies by scoring goals, and he's just so desperate to see the ball hit the back of the net off his foot.
And just on that, would he be financially compensated based on the number of goals he scores? Like, would he have a clause in his contract saying, look, you get paid this,
15, 20 goals,
but if you score 15, you get this. If you score 20, you like a little bonus?
I couldn't answer that definitely. There is... the goal bonuses in football are very common.
Yeah.
Very common. Or triggers to new contracts or upgraded contracts, however it may work. So, but I don't know whether Mo Salah's got that, but his manager said he lives and breathes scoring goals.
Right.
But for him to hand the ball to Firmino to ensure that Firmino got his hat-trick, he still had to convert the penalty, but he did with some aplomb. But that just shows the mentality that's inside the Liverpool dressing room. And it's easy to be that way when things are going well, but don't forget, Mo Salah copped a lot of criticism at the start of this season because
goals,
he started slowly off the back of the shoulder injury in the Champions League final, missed most of the World Cup, comes back slow to start the season. He is firing now on all cylinders, and that just shows his mentality.
Interesting, Jurgen Klopp nearly crying on the sideline, because usually he's on the pitch.
He's crying on the pitch.
Mate, that's... if that's the best you got this morning,
exactly. Pretty much it.
Thing too, though, Phil, can't be understated. Liverpool's defence, 20 games into the EPL, had conceded eight goals.
Yeah, that's right. It's phenomenal.
Yeah,
it really is.
Scored 48. Van Dijk. Who was the? I was reading an article during the week that they talked about Liverpool. It was the 1950s or the 1960s. They bought a Scottish defender, and the committee was talking about, no, we can't pay that, and then one of the committeemen said, we can't afford not to pay that. And they got him. I forget the name of, and then they became a powerhouse.
I can't remember the name, but what I will say is this: Van Dijk is a massive in. There is no doubt about that. I think a bigger in has been Alisson, the goalkeeper.
Right.
I just think a goal to win a title, you need someone up top who's going to score all your goals, and you need someone at the back who's going to stop them. But also inject confidence into your back four and your defensive structure. And he has done that. He's pulled off some big saves, but you can see the confidence and the aura he has inside. The 18-yard box and the goals look smaller when he's in there. And that's a big, big point.
Exactly. Some other games overnight. The most interesting one, Tottenham Hotspur going down 1-3 to Wolves.
Yeah, they crumbled late. They were up to a Harry Kane stunner in the 22nd minute, and then Wolves came home strong, 72nd, 83rd and 87th minute. So Pochettino looked on in despair from the technical area late in that game.
Here comes Man United.
Are they?
Here comes Man. Well, absolutely. I'm telling you, they'll finish top four.
I think the board looked at the draw over Christmas, New Year, and went, now's a good time to get rid of Mourinho. Whoever comes in is going to win these games. And
get a blind start.
Which strategically,
okay. It's good thinking.
It's good thinking, actually. Yeah. So, but no, they are looking good. Do you are you going to wrap me up?
Yes, very shortly.
Do you want my highlight, low light, and most memorable?
Well, we can't not get it now, do you? You've mentioned it.
Well, I've been thinking about this.
At least you've listened to the show and he's come in prepared. Thanks, Phil.
He's listened. At the very least, listen to the program. Fair dicker.
I listened to Wally Lewis and I listened to Shane Gould. That was fantastic.
Yeah, they were good.
Wally Lewis, what a great story. But my highlight.
Yes. Liverpool. 9 points clear at New Year's.
Liverpool, 9 points clear. Yeah. My low light, the VAR and Hyundai A-League Grand Final. That was terrible, absolutely terrible. Most memorable, it's a split between Riley McGree's scorpion kick,
which sent
the A-League around the world, and another thing that sent the A-League around the world, which I was critical of, but when you look back on it, it's still a highlight, Usain Bolt. in a Mariners shirt, scoring a goal and doing his celebration. And
couldn't pay for that publicity.
I didn't say it's a highlight. I said it's
a memorable. It is
moment.
Memorable. Yeah, yeah.
You can't
you're
forget
quite
things
right.
Like
quite
that.
Right. Well, Phil, just on behalf of everyone here, you know, well, just as you talk about
it, here we go.
When's a good time to sack someone when you're coming into a good? I'm joking.
I'm looking at Santa's sack behind your left shoulder.
Just be careful there. That didn't sound quite right. Anyway, Phil, great year, mate. Thoroughly
Thank
enjoyed
you.
It. We look forward to doing it again in 2019.
Been an absolute pleasure, guys. Thank you to you. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, of course, to everyone here, but especially to our listeners who put up with us every Sunday morning.
Good point. Happy New Year, mate.
Good on you.
Thanks,
too.
Phil Moss there with all the latest on football. Time now to go to our Victorian listener.
Our sole Victorian listener.
Yeah, exactly. Trent Lanscott, I believe he's there. Trent.
Good morning to you, Jimmy and Ray. Always here on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. Happy New Year, Trent.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, Trent, it does mostly. It's still raining in Melbourne?
There is a bit of precipitation around, and it won't save the Aussies. Unfortunately,
rain.
Ray, it's not going to happen. But we do have Australia at $26. The draw is also $26. India are $1.02 if you're a thrill seeker for the third test. Australia 8 for 258 with the victory target of 399. It was great to be there yesterday, fellas, to applaud Pat Cummins, firstly with the ball and then the bat. Tremendous effort. We are already open on the fourth test, which starts on Thursday at the SCG. Australia and India are both $2.20 and the draw $6. And there is one big bash game tonight. It's a 7:15 start in Launceston between the Hobart Hurricanes and the Perth Scorchers. The Hobart Hurricanes are $1.80 and the Perth Scorchers $2.05.
And a couple of A-League games today too, Trent.
Well, the one, Ray, and Mossy was just talking about it, a 7:30 start now, just put back half an hour because of the heat there in Newcastle. And Newcastle, he says they're going to win there, $2.25. Adelaide United, $3.05. The draw at $3.50. Then there's four matches overnight to conclude round 20 of the EPL. Just mention a couple of the, well, there's three notable ones. Chelsea are $1.65. They're away to Crystal Palace. That's at 11 o'clock. Manchester City, they're $1.28 to arrest the form slide against Southampton. That's a 1:15 in the morning. And Manchester United, they're $1.35, Jimmy, to get the 3 points against Bournemouth. That's at 3:30 in the morning. I'll just quickly finish, fellas, with the Hopman Cup. It got underway yesterday. The Australians got the win there. And we've got from 1 o'clock Germany against Spain and from 8:30 Switzerland against Great Britain, which means that Roger Federer will be in action, Ray. He is $1.14 against Great Britain's Cameron Norrie at $5.50. There's plenty else happening, fellas. But you can check out all the markets and plenty more at tab.com.au.
Good on you, Trent. Thanks, on behalf of everyone here, actually, I shouldn't speak on behalf of everyone else. It's just every person for themselves here on
not,
a Sunday
no.
morning, much like the Australian Cricket 11. Thank you very much for your contributions throughout the course of 2018. We look forward, if Tab Management re-sign you, as having you involved in the program in 2019.
It's ominous, isn't it, Trent? I think we lost Trent.
Trent's gone,
isn't
he?
You like perpetuating this myth, don't you?
Oh, it's not a myth, Raymond. It's not a myth.
One team.
Here we go. Tim from on Twitter, at Big Sports WEND, says, belting some 2020 bowlers in anger doesn't fix your glaring issues at test level, and the only Australian media would suggest such a stupid thing as a recall. Talking about Peter Hanscom. So well said, Stuart Clark. Finally. Someone making sense,
well,
yeah.
You can't bring him back hitting 170 in a big bash game. He's got to go and score runs and shit.
Oh, of course.
And,
of course.
As Stuart Clark quite rightly pointed out, there's no opportunity to do so.
No. That's the scheduling issue that is at the core of what has been a difficult time for Australian cricket. Hey, we've got to say, not on today, but Scotty Foster from C. Foster & Sons Quality Car has been a great sponsor of the program for a long, long time. Didn't they sell some cars this year?
In the mid-20s, wasn't it?
Oh, our strike rate was, we were at about 50%. Maybe we should get a bonus written in there, like goals, like Mo Salah. Any car we sell, we get a bonus.
Oh, I heard silly things said.
Yeah. All right, well, it's actually mostly by me.
No, anyway.
13:53:53, just before we say goodbye for 2018, let's take a call. James is on the line. G'day, James.
Yeah, g'day. A couple of highlights for the year. I thought going to the East-South final thing, the SFS at its full capacity, a record crowd for that. The last
yes.
game there.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite touching. I was actually there too with my daughter. It was quite an experience.
Good one.
Bit of history, James. Yeah, bit of history.
Yep. And obviously the Roosters win, and also the Tonga Kangaroos
International. I thought that was a great highlight as well.
Yes. Cracking game.
And probably downlight, probably disappointing that the Kangaroos, the Australian Rugby League, people haven't given the Kangaroos a chance to play England next year when they're coming down on the tour to Southern Hemisphere. I just think that was a real downer.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. Yeah, there is some issues around scheduling. The strength of the NRL makes it difficult from an international point of view. Do you want to grow the international game?
Well,
All those things go in the mix.
There's some momentum in international games.
Tom,
who wins? Who's our big winner today?
Special mention to Sally, special mention to Phil, special mention to Noel, but I don't think we can go past Wayne, who made mention of the mare's race that was in the backyard at his place, where three of them were in foal, for want of a better term, and congratulations to Auntie Mary.
I hope she wasn't listening, Auntie Mary.
Who was able to take out the event. So, Wayne, on the back of that, what's been a good fun show, you are our winner.
And
you
what's the win again?
Big Sports Breakfast cap, Big Sports Breakfast T-shirt, Sports Year Diary, Winx book, and a carton of Wingmen. Three hats here. Jimmy, the player I think you're talking about is Ian Rush. No, it's not. It's not Ian Rush.
The defender you were talking about.
He was a defender.
Yeah.
It was defender. That'll be a bit of homework for me during the course of the week. Coming up on Racing HQ, Raymond Chantel Buckley is going to preview